Today on The Grave Talks, the haunted history of the Beatty Mansion with owner Michael Burkhart. Perched atop a hill and encircled by a rock wall in St. Joseph, Missouri, stands the Beatty Mansion. Over the years, this grand structure has served the St. Joe community in a variety of ways. Constructed in 1854, the Beatty Mansion was the residence of Armstrong and Eliza Beatty. Armstrong, a distinguished banker who later served as mayor five times, played an active role in the community. In 1878, Armstrong Beatty passed away after a bout with cholera. Left behind was Eliza, though for some reason, history seems to have mysteriously erased her existence after her husband's untimely demise. After Eliza's passing, it became a haven for the city's homeless and a refuge for the orphaned, and for more than 100 years, it was a sanctuary for the elderly. Hundreds of people have lived within the walls of the Beatty Mansion, and many have never left. It's believed that Armstrong and Eliza are both still in their beloved home. And when the current owner tried to hire people to help with renovations, many of them wouldn't return due to all of the paranormal activities within its walls. Today on The Grave Talks, the haunted history of the Beatty Mansion with owner Michael Burkhart.
I live in Florida. You know, there was no rhyme or reason for buy this place other than from the time I saw it, it was overgrown and it was really, you know, had been let go. I felt like this warm embrace, like the building grabbed me and gave me a big hug as soon as I came in the door. And every time I go back, it's like that. I considered selling it. That's why we called it the house on the hill for a couple of years, because I was considering selling it. Time I go back, it just embraced me all over again, and it still does that, and that's why I would say probably 70% of our visitors have been there before, because we get all these repeat people that come back because there is so much activity. The group we had, Short Bus Paranormal, joined for our Halloween ghost haunt, which we're going to make an annual event. But this was the first one, and they joined us, and they've probably been eight times maybe, and they just can't get enough. If we weren't 4.5 hours away, we'd be there every other weekend or before you kick us out.
I was talking to someone yesterday that had bought, it's called the Drish House, and they were very similar in what they said. They said they were very drawn to the house, and it was almost like they felt like they had to buy it. Like it was this overwhelming, we don't know what we're going to do with it, but we need to own it. I think that's so interesting. It's like the house picked you.
You know, I lived in Florida. The reason I even saw it is because I had about a half a day to kill. And I said, you know, this town intrigued me. I wouldn't mind looking at a couple properties just for grins, you know, sort of for future reference. I'm not position to buy anything, and a day later I saw it, and the next day I made an offer.
So when
I had to have it.
When you saw it, it was not in very good condition, was it?
It structurally, it was very sound, as it still is, but the lady was a hoarder to the nth degree, and she would leave town, and it would get broken into, and vandals would come in, and she had all these boxes filled with, and she'd acquired it somewhere, and they flipped them all. So there were 10 rooms at least that you could not walk.
Oh my gosh.
And that, you know, and that brought in little varmints and stuff, little small types. So that was that they were small, but still, I don't like them.
No, not at all. And they're not good for a house.
They're not.
When
they're
things
not.
Are sneaking that in and the, out, that's not good.
Yeah, exactly. That was the first thing we got rid of.
Was there a point that Because I find this so interesting that you felt so compelled that you made an offer the next day.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Was there a point in there that you were like, what am I doing? I don't even live in St. Joe, Missouri.
Yeah. But then I mistakenly thought that, you know, well, this might be a good place to spend summers. It'll be nice and cool. Was I confused? It's hotter there than it is here in Florida.
What year was that you bought it?
It was 2005.
Oh, you've had it almost 20 years, 18 years now.
Almost 20 years, yep. But we never, the intent after that was I was going to turn it into like a boutique hotel or a little Airbnb thing. I would hire these workers and they'd come in and spend a week, maybe 2 weeks, and then they wouldn't come back. And it wasn't a quest payment or anything. I mean, they were all paid very fairly. I ran into one of them at the gas station. I said, man, I really need your help. Where have you been? He said, man, that place gives me creeps. He said, I don't know if you realize it, but it's really haunted. And I said, I know, but, you know, they're not going to hurt you.
And I'm paying you money.
Exactly. And it was person after person that kept saying that. So finally, a good friend of mine, Rob Long, said, you know, would you mind if I let some paranormal investigators come in and just check it out? They have all the perfect equipment and everything. So I said, yeah, I don't see any problem. But if in the event I do sell it, let's call it the house on the hill, because it is. So he let this group come in. We'd like to come back and spend the night. To him, he didn't tell me, but to him. So he let them come back and spend the night, and their exact words were, it is insanely haunted.
Now, did you pick up on that?
I had a lot of things happen, but you know, I just kind of, you know, I'd see a shadow figure and I'm just kind of, well, you know, it's got to be the, you know, sun coming through the window or something. And I always would try to explain it in the earthly realm. And finally when I turned the corner and embraced it and realized this is the real deal, was I was up there with a dog. I had a black lab, and every night around maybe 11 or 12, right around bedtime, I would hear this music playing and laughter, and like there was a party going on somewhere in the house. And I'm the only one in there with my dog. But each night it happens. And finally, the last night I'm there, I hear the same thing. This time I hear children distinctly. I hadn't really picked up on that before. And the music that was playing was something I had never heard before. There's a rainstorm going outside. And I wake up. I look over at the alarm, and it's one of those old digital, or those not digital, but those flip kinds where the numbers roll around.
Yeah.
It was exactly 4:00, exactly 4 a.m. Well, the bathroom was down the hallway, so I would have said, well, let's use the bathroom. So I start walking down the hallway, and my dog's following me. I hear the music playing and the laughter. I'm like, I'm going to find this. And I'm convinced it's a clock radio or something that it clicks on every night around the same time. And why there would be laughter, I don't know, but. So I start going down the hall, and I'm searching room by room by room by room, get down at the end of the hallway. This is on the second floor, and the only thing there is a fire escape. So I said, you know, maybe it's kids outside playing in the rain or something. So I open the fire escape door, and the music, the laughter, everything stops. There's no one outside. And the hair on the back of my neck goes up and in my arms, and I turned around and scurried back to the room. Didn't have to go to the bathroom anymore. Me and the dog go in the room. I wedge a chair against the door like that's really going to do something. And my dog goes in the closet. She had never done it before, never done it since. But there she was, and she wouldn't come out. And I said, okay, this stuff's real. Since I've embraced it, I'm more cognizant of what goes on, and it happens all around. Absolutely all around.
And that night, did you think that maybe some kids had even broken in, or you had an intruder, a very talkative one? Or did it just feel Maybe all of those things, yes. So when you bought the house, did you even think about paranormal activity there? Were you a skeptic at the time?
I was definitely a skeptic for sure. And I didn't even think about it. It's just a cool old building, really cool old building. And I thought, you know, even if this bed and breakfast thing doesn't work out, I'll still live in the coolest place in town.
That's true.
You know, even though it's 18,000 square feet and 34 bedrooms, it seemed like a big cottage. As weird as that sounds.
And it does, I'm going to say it does sound kind of funny because 34 bedrooms.
It really does. Yeah.
That's a lot. That's a lot.
It's a lot. Yep.
Now, when you look back at the history of the building, since you mentioned how big it is, and we might want to dive into that a little bit, because when it was initially built, it was Armstrong and Eliza Beatty?
That's correct.
So
yep.
They bought Armstrong. It. They built it in 1854.
That's correct. Yep.
Then it was added on to. So when it was originally built, it wasn't like the two of them is like, we need 34 bedrooms.
Right, right. It was in the current construction, it's 20 bedrooms. What the original design was in the interior, we're pretty certain where the parlor was, because that's the same. The library is the same. Well, one of the bathrooms are the same, but the entrance has all been changed since they owned it. Originally, it opened directly down onto Main Street to the east in about 1900 when it was added on to. The entrance was changed to the south, and that's where it is today. That's where the porch and the balcony was added on to.
Now, did Armstrong, is that his real name or is it?
Yeah. Okay. No, it's Armstrong Beatty, Beattie, and Eliza was his wife. He was a prominent banker in town. He was the first banker that had a physical address in St. Joe, and I saw an old ad one time that said Armstrong Beatty, banker. We loan money from St. Joseph to Sacramento, which coincidentally was the same route the Pony Express took.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah, so he was a very prominent banker. While he was a shrewd businessman, he was widely beloved. He consequently was elected to be mayor 5 times. The only person to ever serve as mayor 5 times in St. Joseph's nearly 200-year history.
And he had some money.
Yes, yes. He was very wealthy. That's why I continue to believe there's gold hidden somewhere in the walls, but that's just
keep
me.
Looking. Keep looking. I just
yeah,
know it's
I will.
There.
You bet.
Now, but the two of them, did they not have kids?
They did not have children. She had a sister who married Robert Wilson, who was a U.S. senator. It was rumored that there were some pretty extravagant parties up at the mansion, in the parlor especially. Yeah, they had no children. They did have a niece, Sarah. They became very close to her, and her wedding was at the mansion as well as with the reception.
Because I thought it was so interesting when I was reading about the house, and I don't know how many square... Do you know how many square feet it would have been originally?
About 10,000.
So it was a big, big home for two people.
Absolutely.
But
yeah.
Then they didn't have any heirs when they both passed?
No, it was only the niece in the extended family, but no direct lineage of theirs.
So he died of cholera, I believe.
Right. In 1878. Yeah.
And then she died a couple years later.
Exactly. She had fallen down the stairs and was largely invalid for the last 2 years of her life. When she died, there were no grave markers for either of them. And how we found that out is there was an article that appeared in the St. Joseph Press, News Gazette, I think it was called at that time, that called The Ghost of Armstrong Beatty. And so it really caught my eye. I said,
yeah.
Whoa, wait.
Wait, I own his house.
Yeah, exactly. And we have his ghost there. So how can you know about it back in 1888? And this gentleman had written an article to the paper saying, I was deeply distressed when I went to look for the gravesite of one of the most prominent businessmen in St. Joe's history and was unable to find anything until I got to the corner and there was a wooden cross that had been knocked over and it said A. Beatty on it. He said if he were alive today, he would be rolling over in his grave, and I'm sure his spirit would be walking these streets of the cemetery.
It just seems like a man of his means would have had the biggest monument.
That's what you would have thought, but he died fairly suddenly and, you know, unexpectedly. And Eliza, I believe at that point, was an invalid, and she had never handled money. She had no clues, and she was left the house and the contents, but none of the proceeds of his estate monetarily.
And, you know, too, so she might have been so emotionally distraught.
Right. That's what a couple of mediums have said, told us that was the case, that she was extremely distraught and just overwhelmed to all of a sudden have to deal with things she'd never even considered before. You know, maintaining a household and paying for things and things that women back there just didn't do. And all of a sudden it's thrust upon her.
And she'd been taken care of.
Yeah.
And I think it's interesting that then when she passes, she doesn't get much of a marker.
Right.
Either. Do you think that they were buried near each other?
Yeah, they're buried today. They're buried next to each other. I assume they were then, but when she died, it's like she was written out of history. We've been able to find, on the internet, you could find most anything if you look hard enough, but there is virtually nothing. I mean, we've had several people do a deep, deep dive trying to find out more about her. Her name was Eliza Snoddy, Snoddy, but that was her maiden name. But after she died, there's nothing. And so that led me to think that maybe they weren't on good terms when he passed for some reason. Somebody tried to speculate he had a mistress, but there's no proof of that I could find.
And with her not having any children to step up and say, we need a beautiful marker for mom and dad, you know, a headstone.
Right. Yep.
There was no one to
because
do that.
Because that's who would, exactly, and that's who would do it, you know. And in the same vein, when Armstrong died, she should have been the person to, you know, plant his grave marker. If he had known where he was going to die, he would have pre-planned, I'm sure, but he didn't. He didn't have any clue until it was too late.
And, you know, things were different then. There wasn't all these places where you could pre-plan your funerals. And, you know, it just wasn't really like that.
Yeah. Up at the mansion, we've got a couple of books that have a lot of the obituaries of people that died in and around the mansion around the turn of the century. And the way the obituaries were written back then are very, very gruesome and tell it like it is. So, but his was very respectful.
And after both of them passed, then it became a home for the friendless.
Exactly. The Ladies Union Benevolence Association, or LUBA for short, was a group of 14 ladies that had a Bible study. And they felt called to try to acquire this place. See, back after the Civil War, St. Joseph was literally like the wild, wild west. Mm-hmm. It was one of the two gateways to the west, St. Louis on the Mississippi and St. Joseph on the Missouri. And there were an estimated 80 brothels in town.
And I had to let that sink in for a minute.
Yeah, yeah. That's a lot for a town of, you know, roughly 100,000. But the population would swell to double that over the winter, as the early settlers would have to wait until spring, when the prairie grass had grown sufficiently so they could travel westward with their livestock.
And so in the meantime, that just became a booming business for St. Joe.
it became a booming business. But the downside was these ladies would get pregnant and have a child, and they'd be out on the street and with no place to go. So these ladies were distressed by what they saw, you know, in the street corners and everything. So they opened it up and called it the Home for the Friendless. And in the first month, 18 people moved in, mostly women with children. And as time went on, they began to take on more and more orphans. And so then it was split. It was called the Home for the Friendless and the Home for Little Wanderers.
And I've heard the Home for the Friendless before, and that just makes me sad.
Yeah, it does. It really does. It's so descriptive, but really sad.
And you think, you know, people knew what it was called, and that's where they have to go. And I just think the name alone would make you feel very ostracized. And those women would have been, though, anyway.
Exactly. Yeah, you know, I never thought of it like that, but that's so true. It'd be so disheartening to say, yeah, I'm living at the Home for the Friendless.
Yeah.
I was going to say, imagine telling your friends, but you don't have
you
any.
You don't have
so
any.
I guess you wouldn't have to.
I mean, you know, the women stepping up and providing them a place to go, that's quite amazing.
Yeah, it really is.
Because a lot of people would and did turn their backs on those women. And
no,
by
no
doing
question.
That, they would turn their backs on the kids, which was no fault of their own.
So true. And so true.
Was it that for quite a while then?
It was that until about 1905. Then it became, they outgrew the facilities and what opened up Noyes, I believe it was Noyes, N-O-Y-E-S, Noyes Home. But it became the Memorial Home for the Aged. And I don't know if some of these ladies were now aged, but it became Memorial Home for the Aged, which it was for almost 100 years. So
that's incredible.
I think that accounts why it's, I think that's what one of the things that accounts for why it's so active. But with benevolent, what I would call benevolent spirits, or spirits that are just, that are grateful.
Mm-hmm.
They're like a priest, they're like appreciative that they have a place.
And that would also, with the what you just explained with the Home for the Friendless and taking in these kids, that would also explain the child spirits that you have in the home.
Yep, exactly.
When you think about it, 100 years of being basically a nursing facility, there would have been a lot of people pass away.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So is that when they added on to it then, was when it was the Home for the Aged?
When it became Memorial Home for the Aged,
So that was a big facility then at the time, 34 rooms?
Yes, for sure. Yeah, They're all large rooms too, so some of them would have two people in them.
And when you mentioned the ghost of Armstrong Beatty, you know, when you found that article, have you found other articles of hauntings or anything like that that go back quite a ways?
Yes.
Please share.
Well, we've got both of these articles on the wall hanging in the mansion that people can read. But there's a story about Mabel Iden, who passed away at the Home for Little Wanderers, is what they called the orphanage portion. They said, Mabel Iden passed away today at the age of 4 years, 3 days old, surrounded by her playmates. And it goes on to say how
that got me in the heart.
Yeah.
Surrounded by her playmates, really, not her family, her playmates.
Right.
Oh.
She had ended up at the Home for the Little Wanderers 2 years before with a brother and a sister after their father had drowned in a lake. With no place to go, they ended up, the three of them ended up at the Home for Little Wanderers. And at 4 years, 3 days old, Mabel Iden passed away.
And is she one of the, it seems like, that name seems familiar.
She's definitely one of the spirits that are still with us. She wanders the hall. There's a room that she's claimed, and there's a lot of unusual things that happen in there. People frequently put chiclets or some kind of little candy on the bed, and go do something else or go to eat, come back, and they're either arranged in a line or some, you know, heart shape we found one time. Just all kinds of things that, and I've actually caught an apparition of her, a little blonde-haired girl peeking around the corner. I also know when Paranormal Lockdown, where we came and spent the 3 days, they caught an apparition of her peeking around the corner. And several people have seen her up on the second floor peeking out, or even a couple people have seen a full body apparition of her.
So she's a pretty powerful little spirit then.
Yeah, for sure.
Whenever I hear of little kids like that, it just gets me in the heart every time.
Yeah, me too. Do you have children of your own?
I do not.
Yeah, I don't either. I don't either.
I think that's in part why I want to help. It's like, I got you.
I agree. I know. I'm the same way.
When they built on this big addition, and then it's the Home for the Aged for 100 years, because I'm going to guess, it's like now you need an outlet every 5 feet. You need places to plug your phone in.
There was, surprisingly, there was a sprinkler system.
Oh, that is surprising.
And that's been triggered before by accident. We thought it was empty and it had been drained, and down the basement above the commercial stove, down in the basement, there's a full kitchen. A full commercial kitchen that's supplied, and then there's a dumb waiter that goes up to the first floor where there's a standard kitchen, and they would pass food between the two and serve the residents in the dining hall.
It just hit me at the beginning of our conversation. You said that the home kind of had a cottage-like feel, even though it's quite large.
Yeah.
And now when you're talking about an industrial kitchen, it doesn't sound cottagey.
No, it doesn't. It doesn't. Down in the basement.
Get that feel.
You kind of forget that it's there.
Yeah, you
I still get that feel.
You don't probably go down there very often.
No, no. That's where we have had an evil presence down there. But I think he's been banished. During the weekend on the Saturday night, they had a confrontation with this spirit that was quite powerful and angry, very angry. And over the course of the next 2 hours, they prayed and they confronted him. And finally they came up and they were just drained. They said, he's gone. We chased him out. And that's why the children were afraid, because he had molested them. That's why the children were hiding from him. And he's gone now. And that was a big relief. They said, just don't ever say his name again. He won't come back.
Were you there that night that happened?
Yeah.
Ooh.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I saw this firsthand.
Oh, that sounds absolutely horrifying. And that's powerful. Like, you know, because you speak of like this cute little child ghost.
Yeah,
but this is not that. This would be, this sounds almost like a demonic.
Opposite. Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Most definitely it was. I've always said we want to do everything we can to keep those spirits out and continue to foster the spirits that are playful, you know, the spirits that embrace visitors, the spirits that, you know, don't cause harm to people or anything like that.
Now, on that particular night when that happened, I'm going to guess it wasn't like, hey, come by tonight, let's banish this evil spirit in the basement.
No, they had no clue, no idea that that's what they were going to encounter and have to do. There's never any discussion about it. You know, I had heard a couple of people mention that, well, maybe, you know, there's somebody that was molesting children. I said, I don't know. There's no proof of that. I don't know that. And then they came up and told the whole story, because I had wondered where they went. I hadn't seen them for about 2 hours. And late Saturday night, they came up and just looked drained and very sullen, for lack of a better word. They just looked really sullen, like really serious. I mean, I
And I would think a lot of times when you have people investigating, there's some lightheartedness going on.
Sure.
You know, so
sure.
when you see that, you know something's happened.
Yeah. And then ironically, it was later that night that they were up on the second, no, it was the first floor, and they were live streaming, and they were being playful. One was at the end of the, in the other room at the end of the camera, and he was holding up pictures of cats doing funny things, and they started laughing. And then at the same time, the EVP meter's just going bonkers. I mean, the spirits were right along with it. They were laughing. They were, you know, they were cutting. They said it was the craziest thing. They were all laughing so hard, and the spirits were right there with them. And so there was this levity that had come on that hadn't been there before.
That's an amazing story.
I didn't even think about it until I pieced it all together. Just talking now, because I'm like, it was later that night when the whole mood changed. And it was after they had told me that about him being banished.
And when you get a horrible person like that in life who would abuse children, this is where, you know, he could be a maintenance man or someone like that.
That's exactly what he was. That's exactly what he was. Yep.
Oh. I am so glad he's gone.
He spent most of his time and absolutely. He had done some other things. Rob Long, who I'd mentioned earlier, he was down there one night, and he was doing a session, and all of a sudden he's got this, it's in the winter, and he's got this shirt on and a flannel shirt and a jacket over it, but all of a sudden he said my arm just like stung, because I went upstairs, I take my jacket off, I take my shirt sleeve up, and there's these deep scratches that were bleeding. And it didn't, there was nothing to the jacket, nothing to the shirt, but underneath it all, he had these three parallel deep scratches in his, going down his arm. And that might've been the same entity. And we'd heard several people had said in the tunnels between the two buildings that, they've heard growling right in one particular area. They hear something growls at them. And whether that was him as well, who knows? But I guess time will tell if it continues or isn't anymore.
You know, just when you're around someone in life who can give off a very negative energy, and you just feel it.
And, oh, no question.
And
no
I think
question.
In a place like the Beatty Mansion, you know, you would there'd be days I would think it would feel lighter than other days, but once that entity is gone, I would imagine the feeling in the entire place would have changed.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I was only there till, I guess I left Tuesday. It did feel different. It did feel different. I didn't even think about it until you just said that, but it did feel different.
It'd be interesting when you go back.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
And you were also lucky to have someone there equipped to deal with it.
Oh, for sure, yeah. They're some of the most experienced people that we've had. They were in the right place at the right time.
Man, they've got a story to share.
I wouldn't have a clue. Yeah, and I can hook you up with them if you're interested.
Yeah, let's do that. That would be interesting to talk to them from their perspective.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Honestly, if it was me, my solution to that would have been run, get out of here. No,
me too. Me too.
Go
me too.
Someplace
me
else.
Too, I wouldn't know. Yep, I wouldn't know what to do. I wouldn't know the words to say. I wouldn't know.
And that wraps up part one of our conversation about the haunted history of the Beatty Mansion. For more information on paranormal investigations, visit their website at thebeattymansion.com or search for Beatty Mansion on Facebook. If you'd like access to all of our episodes, including the archive and advanced episodes, everything commercial free, Become a Gravekeeper. Sign up on Apple Podcasts, where you can try it for 3 days free. You can also sign up on patreon.com/thegravetalks. I'm Carol Hughes, and for all of us at The Grave Talks, thank you so much for listening.